welcome to The Blurg. This week I'm joined by Computer World's JR Rafiel. JR, thanks so much for joining, and welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. Happy to be here. The Blurg is the place to be, so it's an honor.
I don't know about that, but I thank you for saying that anyway.
Yeah, we'll say it enough and people will believe it.
All right. So Marshmallow was announced and there was a hopefully pretty close to final preview release this week as well. There weren't too many surprises, which I don't think was a surprise to anyone. That's the nature of the preview releases Google are going for. I think the biggest thing for me was the fact that Google saw fit to bump the version number to 6.0. And I saw this and immediately went on Twitter and just went, you know, said words to the effect, I'm very surprised that it wasn't 5.2. And then Phil Nickenson replied and said, basically, JR's been saying the same thing. And yeah, I looked at your feed and you'd been saying exactly that, but better. Yeah, so we're both surprised by that one, it's fair to say, right?
Yeah, definitely. And we kind of got into a conversation about it there. But, you know, it's one of those things. It's almost an academic matter. To most people, version number doesn't really mean that much. You know, and a typical person with an Android phone probably doesn't even know what version they're using. Maybe they know the name, as in Lollipop or what have you, maybe not. But I'd wager to say most don't know the version number. But, yeah, you know, up till this point, the full number jumps, you know, going to 3.0, 4.0, 5.0. have really been reserved for what you call these major transformative releases, where it's not only been cool under the hood stuff, but also a big visual change. And I think everybody in the world was kind of, people who watch Android were expecting Marshmallow to be a 0.1 bump, partially too because Google was trolling people and had the screenshots with that number in there, but also just because it has a lot going on. It really follows in the Lollipop sort of theme and feels like part of that same family, so it seemed really like it would be a 0.1 bump and not a whole to 6.0. I think a lot of us were caught off guard by that.
I agree. I guess it's at the end of the day, it's just a number, and one of the things that I was chatting about in the Action Launcher 3.5 podcast I did with Jesse Wilson, which I think is number 5. So if you haven't listened to that and have an interest in that, that was an interesting episode, I think. But it's tricky, version numbers, what to do there. And I think as far as the fact that Google 6.0, I would hazard a guess that what that means is Google have kind of moved away from their previously established standard of updating version numbers with major visual refreshes. And I think this is part of the new philosophy, if you will, that Google announced at I/O, where they're going to do a preview release of Android every year, and then the big release will come in the fall, and we're going to increase the name every year and that sort of stuff. So I think it's reasonable to expect that next year, no matter what's included in that Android release, it would be 7.0. But, you know, we certainly won't know that until next year, and Google may change their line of thinking by then, between now and then anyway. So who knows? I guess who cares? It's just a number.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about, though. I mean, part of me wonders, too, like you said, it's definitely a possibility. Maybe it's just they wanted to get on the system. Maybe they think there's enough in it to pack in. And then you've also got to wonder, just to play devil's advocate, is it that, you know, they wanted to distance themselves from the negative connotations surrounding that initial 5.0 release, which, you know, had a lot of bugs and problems and got some negative publicity, kind of a Windows 10 sort of thing.
Because for me, I'm very curious. That's definitely something that I've read in, you know, comments on my blog, my posts, and maybe on Reddit and that sort of stuff. I guess you could summarize by that as being comments by Android enthusiasts. I'm very dubious as to whether there's any sort of mainstream negativity towards Lollipop at all. I just don't think that's the case, but I could be entirely wrong. That's just my gut feel.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those two where you got to wonder. It's a good point. The negative connotation probably is more in the Android community. You know, I would say maybe, though, it could also be targeted, and I'm just speculating here. I have no, this is not any inside info or whatever, but theoretically it could be targeted even at manufacturers or carriers, you know, who Google's probably more than consumers worried about getting to adopt and quickly churn out. And I don't know, it's an interesting point. The marketing with Android is almost as much relevant to the manufacturers and the people who are taking the software and putting it on devices and using it and prioritizing or not prioritizing, you know, upgrades and pushing stuff out as it is to the end user, the consumer who buys the phone. So it's always possible it could be something on that end too, that they want a full number release and one that's, you know, this is not another lollipop thing. Either way you look at it, it kind of gives the impression of, hey, this is significant. Let's get this out. This is 6.0. You guys have got to push it out. And I don't know, again, just theory. I'm just speculating as another possibility. Like you said, it could just as easily be that they want to get on a yearly cycle of a full number, which again, you know, also kind of comes down to a matter of marketing and perception. So sure. I guess either way you come around to it, they're trying to get a perception of it's a big deal every year and we've got one big release. The other ones, you know, take them for what they are. They're fixing stuff, they're polishing, they're improving, but the one big deal every year that you've got to have kind of deal.
Yeah. Yep. What do you think of the Marshmallow name itself?
You know, I think I'm most excited to see how many people misspell it and for how long it goes. I know I've already seen like the Marshmallow, M-E-L-L. Yeah, I don't know. I think everyone was expecting Milkshake for a while because of the little joke they played at I.O. where, who was it?
David? Well, I think it's well established that Google are trolls in that regard.
Right, right. They know they're hardcore fans are watching closely, and so they mess with them, which is, you know, it's a googly kind of thing to do. You got to applaud that. Yeah, you know, it's better than some. I mean, the one that was a major pain from a writer's point of view was Ice Cream Sandwich, because there was just so much to write. You know, how do you write a headline with Ice Cream Sandwich? That's already like half your headline length there.
Yeah.
So at least Marshmallow is one word. It's concise. I'm sure we'll start calling it MM before long, at least among like casual usage. But I think I can live with it. Can you stomach this one for a year?
I don't particularly care, is my honest answer on the treat. I mean, it's not something I hate. Like, I would have hated Key Lime Pie. For the K release, but I wasn't particularly fond of giving Nestle all that free marketing either. And the same with lemon meringue pie. I would have thought that would have been a bit too much. But yeah, I mean, I guess I would have preferred Milkshake, but Marshmallow's fine. I should be honest and say that when I tried to spell it for the first time, I spelled it with an E, and I was auto-corrected. So.
It happens. You know, at least they didn't do some weird, I don't know, people were saying some, now they're escaping my name, but some rarer kind of desserts that no one would be able to spell. Some things that are kind of out there, like when you do a list of a search for desserts to start with M and you find some really exotic sounding names that no one would have gotten it. I think personally, I'm most excited about, and no one will be able to see this but Chris, but being able to throw out this baggie of assorted lollipop pieces that I've had in my desk for the past year for photo-taking purposes for stories.
The one thing that I did find interesting about the announcement of the name was more how it related to the logo itself, which for the second time in a row has the Android logo unmodified and holding the tasty treat. I expect at this point that's probably a bit of a pattern Google will follow, only because for a long time Google completely shied away from the name Android itself. They had that funky little logo, Android with its funky text there. I don't even know how best to describe that, but their guidelines specifically stated that you cannot use the Android the Android name. You can use the logo, which was the ice cream sandwich or the jelly bean indicator or whatever. But they've definitely moved away from the philosophy that you can't say the word Android anymore. Certainly there was a time, I think it was when around the HTC M7 and Galaxy S4, where those carriers released an update and suddenly it said powered by Android on the front. So, and around that time, I think Google went, no, we're going to embrace the name Android. And it seems they have also done the same with the logo itself, in that they're not modifying the green droid.
Yeah, that's a really interesting little thing to pick up on that I once you mentioned it, I was like, oh yeah, you're right. I don't think I even wouldn't have even occurred to me. But yeah, those old logos were all sort of morphing the Android logo, the robot, into whatever it was. You know, like the ice cream sandwich one comes to mind, or the Kit Kat one, whereas the last couple have been the actual green robot, like you said. And it's hard not to think there's a connection there, because like you said, there has been a definite focus on branding on Google's behalf over the last couple of years. And if it's a coincidence, it seems like an awfully big coincidence, because it really does go hand in hand right on with the timing of when they started branding it and using the name everywhere, and they relaunched, you know, their own Android site with a lot more information and at a kind of a consumer facing site and sure. find the phone that's right for you. So yeah, it definitely lines up, and it seems like a smart move once you key into that.
And I think what gives that idea a little bit of credence is the fact that it seems very obvious how you would make a marshmallow Android logo, right? I mean, everyone immediately thinks of Ghostbusters and I think that would have been the coolest thing in the world had they gone with something along that. But I think it's a conscious decision not to, but I guess we'll find out going forward with future releases, with the obvious caveat that Google could change their line of thinking at any time. So
yeah, seriously, the one thing I've learned about Google over the years is every time I think I kind of have wrapped my head around something they're doing, like, okay, this is how it works, this is how IO is structured, this is the timing, this is how Android releases, whatever it is, you can't predict Google. I mean, it's this whole like Alphabet thing a couple weeks ago demonstrated. Every time you think you've got Google figured out, they throw some random curveball that you never in a million years would have expected. So even if we're absolutely right on this, who knows what the hell will happen in another 2, 3, 5 years.
And we might be right today, but wrong in 2 weeks. It's just the nature of it. The Marshmallow release itself, have you installed it, flashed it on your Nexus 5 or Nexus 6 or anything?
Yeah, so I'm not running it on a phone. I've got a Nexus 9 that I kind of keep around for those purposes, but I've been playing around with it on that. I'd like to do it on phone and tablet, but just realistically, it ends up just being easier to have a tablet that's sort of the testing front and then, you know, leave it to there. Yeah, I mean, it's and I think this was kind of what seemed to be the case with Lollipop, too. By this point, it feels pretty complete. I mean, you know, aside from the couple of gaps, like the Now on Tap, and you know, you've got to figure there are a few other random things that'll probably get thrown in or polished up, but it feels like it's got to be pretty close to final status here. Is that kind of what you're feeling from your perspective?
Absolutely. I it feels like there's very little new, but that's to be entirely expected. Google was, I don't think anyone was thinking they'd be in the business of dropping some surprise new feature at the end, because that would largely defeat the point of the preview itself. There's definitely a part of me that as a user is keen to try out the Now on Tap, so I was a bit bummed to see that that's not in place, but again, I understand it. One thing I did find surprising, and I think it's been this way in all the previews, is the fact that the permissions system, which is by any measure, I think, the headline feature of Android, of the Marshmallow release. Like, you can certainly fingerprint scanning and USB Type-C and stuff, they're cool new features, but they're not ones that every phone that upgrades to M is going to get, whereas everyone is going to get this permission feature. The fact that Google buried the permissions in the system settings quite so much, I definitely found that a bit of a surprise. And I just sort of casually tweeted out, highlighting the fact that memory has its own system settings entry, but there's nothing for permissions. It's hidden way deep inside the app setting. And Googler Adam Powell got back to me, which was great, and he said, before apps update to API 23, revoking can leave apps inexplicably broken, not something you want on a highly visible path, which definitely makes a lot of sense. And I sort of remarked that it's not something that it was an interesting response, because one of the things that I try and do, if you will, at times, is try and put myself inside the head of a Googler trying to think of, you know, why would a decision be made like this? And there's absolutely no part of me that would have come up with that as a potential solution, that they were intentionally obfuscating this setting to prevent people messing around with it accidentally and breaking it. And Adam also mentioned that as more and more apps update to Marshmallow and support the permission setting, then it's something they'll promote higher in the system settings, which again makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's very interesting insight into it. I wouldn't have thought of that either. But, you know, I do wonder how long it'll take for the majority of apps to get updated. But then you always have those ones that sort of lag behind, and sometimes from big name, but, you know, like a Microsoft app or something, like something from a big name company that maybe Android just isn't their main focus, and they're like, okay, we'll get to it, and 3 months later that update rolls out. So it'll be interesting to see how that happens. And on that note, I'm curious to ask you on this subject, and not even looking at it from that particular standpoint of what Adam said, but just with the permission system in general, what kind of challenges that's creating for you from a developer standpoint. You know, looking at a case where someone might install your app or use your app, but, you know, opt out of a key permission that you use for some new feature. How's that, is that throwing you for a curve, or how challenging has that been?
It's not an issue for me personally, I don't think, mainly because I don't rely on too many permissions. The two main permissions that I request are phone related, and that's so that I can initiate a phone call from a direct dial shortcut. And if someone revokes that permission, then I can just fall back to a different behavior where basically I tell the system to call a phone number and it initiates the phone, it loads the phone app, but it doesn't start the call. So the only difference is the user then has to press the call button in the phone app, which is entirely fine. And the other is when I write to the SD card for backups and that sort of stuff. So, and you know, if you've revoked my access to the external storage, then it's going to be, I think, pretty obvious why that might fail. So it's not something that is too concerning for me. And certainly as a user and developer alike, I entirely welcome it. LinkBubble, I guess, is different. LinkBubble is no longer mine. And I just was messing around with it the other day and discovered that there's now the draw over apps permission that Google exposes in Android Marshmallow. And if people revoke that, then there's basically no way for LinkBubble to run. So it's a bit more troublesome there. And I could certainly imagine if you're one of these apps, like a good example is I was chatting with one of the Square engineers at Google I.O. talking about the permissions, and they have their app with the card reader, and that requires the microphone permission to actually work. And it's not obvious that a card reader app like Square would need a microphone permission. And I expect they'll do the best they can as far as alerting people as to why they need this permission. But if it pops up and says, hey, we need your microphone permission, and someone's like, no, then that Square Reader app is going to be broken and it's just not going to function. So it's definitely going to be a lot more troublesome for apps that rely on permissions, and also rely on permissions that maybe fall slightly outside of the obvious groups that Google have put all the permissions in. I think there'll be a few little teething issues there, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, but I'm entirely thrilled for it as a user, and as far as my app specifically, I don't think it's going to cause me too much bother, and if anything, it will help me, because I'm always so wary about what permissions I put in that request for up front, because I know I'm very anal about that, and often never install an app. Like I've at times thought, oh, you know, maybe I'll check out WhatsApp or whatever, and their permission list, it doesn't even fit on a phone. I'm just like, no, go away. I'm not giving you access to all of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, maybe in the long run, this will have a positive effect on both for developers and really for Android itself, of finding a way to better explain to average people what permissions are and what they do. It's gotten better over the years. There have been a couple times when Google has changed the way they're presented, made them a little easier to read. You know, they've toyed with it a few times. But I still think to an average user, it can either be something that's scary when you see this huge list, or just something that's kind of vague and you don't understand why, or just overwhelming. You know, there are times when I catch myself installing something and then I go back and think, wait, what permissions did it say? You know, you just kind of automatically hit accept sometimes when you're in the motion of it.
It can definitely be like a terms of service.
Yeah, exactly. You just kind of get tuned into this habit of yeah, okay, whatever, fine, I agree, yeah. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's fine. It's not like most apps that you're downloading, I don't think, are
I'm sure it's higher than nine times out of ten. But it's that nefarious app that, and you have no idea that, and this data's, once it's gone, it's gone. So, I think for me, the biggest issue with it was pre-installed bloatware apps on carrier phones. Like, I had a Galaxy S4, which was bought unlocked, and it had this app called Com2 US Poker, something like that. Had access to my email address, my phone number, all this stuff. And I don't even know who this company is. I couldn't uninstall it. I couldn't disable it. and it really scared me, and I a big concern. And I'm very glad to see that Google have made this change. I'm still surprised, to be honest, because at the end of the day, Google control this operating system, and Google, if nothing else, are a data whore. They just want as much data as possible, and it's not necessarily in Google's interests to allow people to taper back what information is being sent to Google. But I mean, if one wants to get conspiracy theorists, maybe it's something that they felt they needed to do with all their upcoming EU stuff. Maybe that played into it, or maybe it was just as simple as, you know, a few high-ranking people on the Android team thought, no, this is wrong. You know, they tried to look at WhatsApp and said, no, this is gone too far. This is out of control. This is not to everyone's benefit. Let's fix it. So I'm certainly not doing any sort of informed speculation or anything like that. I'm just throwing random things against the wall as to why it happened. But I'm very glad it has.
Yeah, and it's an interesting point too. Google always does kind of walk that fine line of, you know, we all know we use Google services, we like Google services. I think a lot of us, myself included, genuinely believe the people who work at Google and make these services are interested in doing things that will enrich people's lives and do good things. But at the same time, we all know Google's a company. Google is out to make money. You know, it's not some evil thing. It's just the reality. And so there's always that fine line of, you know, doing something that makes sense for the users and is right, but then also how, you know, they need the data. They make money on ads, on understanding user behavior and patterns. So I think we've seen that line before, and most of the time I feel like they usually end up eventually erring to the side that makes sense for consumers, but at least, you know, now in this case it took a while, but at least they got there, and hopefully the motivation is, as you suggest, and more one of, this is what's right, and we can find a way to make it work with the business, but, you know, users first. We'll hope. We'll optimistically give them the benefit of the doubt and you know, say maybe that's what's going on.
Sure. One thing that I've definitely found interesting, and this only actually occurred to me last night, is from the very time Google announced Android M, they said it was going to ship in Q3 this year, which it did. And that's definitely a break from what they've done in the past, which is they'll traditionally, I don't know, do a blog post and say, okay, here's the new version of Android, and you can also buy a Nexus phone today, and we're going to release the AOSP code in the next couple of days or whatever. It's basically this one giant dump. Whereas now, and it's, there's always been the case where bugs have gone through, right? Gotten through, and they've had to release a 5.0.1, and what was it, KitKat, where they had some bug with contacts and birthdays and stuff like that. They've always had to scramble and do bug fixing releases afterwards. And I'm curious, and this is just idle speculation that, again, I haven't had much time to think about, but obviously this time they've released the final APIs earlier than usual. And they have not released the AOSP code yet, at least publicly. And I'm wondering whether this is signaling a different sort of thinking in how they do releases, in that, okay, we're going to finalize and lock down the API, and then we're going to release these previews, and then any actual bug fixes that come up in the ensuing period, we're going to fix them before we actually release any source code. And the hope is that, and I'm speaking from Google's point of view here, the hope is that they will not need to do a 6.0.1 release, that they will have caught all of these bugs before they release the code to people, and then OEMs don't have to sort of walk back and merge more changes in and that sort of stuff. I'm there's just a part of me that is thinking that's what they're thinking there.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, there's always been that criticism, you know, again, in sort of the Android enthusiast community, that, oh, Nexus users are really just beta testers, and you get that first 0.0 release or whatever the brand of release is, so you can work out the bugs, and by the time it gets to, like, you know, every Samsung phone, every HTC phone, they've got the whatever 0.01, 0.02 release that fixes all the crap you lived with for the first month. And, you know, it's a bit of a silly thing to say, but there is some truth to it, because anyone who has a Nexus device knows often that very first release is a little rocky, and we saw it a lot with Lollipop, and as you were saying with KitKat and some of the ones before, there's always there are always some kinks to be worked out. So that would make a lot of sense if they were to do that. And then, I mean, who knows, maybe stuff will still come up and they'll still have to do a 0.01 kind of thing. But theoretically, that should at least help cut down on a lot of it. You know, that being said, I'm curious to see. I think a lot of people are assuming now that the final Marshmallow release, the code drop, and then whatever Nexus devices might accompany it are, you know, literally days away or right around the corner. And I mean, we really don't know. It could be that they want to have this longer testing period. I don't know. It would be a big change in timing if it came certainly in August, although I guess we've only got, not much time left in August. But even in September would be pretty early.
I wouldn't expect I wouldn't expect that this year's Nexus phones. I mean, I guess there's no real informed way to comment on that, but I would expect they'd still be roughly around the Halloween time. I mean, there's only so much you can do in 5 months. When you're making hardware like that, I would think they'd need the code. And I think if I'm going to take the point I just made a little bit further, I'm wondering if, because Google have got the PDK program, what does that stand for? Platform Development Kit, Partner Development Kit, whatever it is.
Something like that.
I'm wondering if the partners then get a snapshot of the code at this point. So Google have finalized the APIs, they give them a snapshot of the code, and then Google are going to take a few months and, you know, iron out any last remaining bugs. The APIs are now locked down, but any last remaining bugs will be locked down, will be fixed, and then what this also means is that it's harder for consumers to sort of point to OEMs and say, oh, look, you know, the source code was released 4 months ago and it's still not here. Whereas if Google release the source code in a staged pattern, don't release it publicly until the Nexus device ships, but give it to OEMs now so they can start working on their updates, which for a variety of reasons can often take months. I'm wondering if that's happening behind the scenes.
It'd be really interesting to know. I mean, even last year with Lollipop, it seemed to some degree, maybe not quite that idea with the whole preview release. I mean, both for app developers like yourself, but then also for the OEMs to be able to see what's happening and, you know, in theory, be more prepared for it. With Lollipop, I don't know. I mean, things were a little better. I still wouldn't say across-the-board updates were great. You know, when you look at the usual players who take quite a long time. There were exceptions to things being faster, but on the whole, it was still a little pokey. So, yeah, I mean, anything they could do to help speed that up. It does seem like the spirit of this whole change of doing the preview releases and being a little more public and open about it was to be able to let both app developers and, you know, developers on the OEM side have a little more advanced notice and not this last-minute surprise rush and everyone scrambles to update and get there. So, it sure seems like that would be smart. And, you know, on the timing of the actual launch and the phones, too, just to revisit that for a minute, you've also got to think, of course, Nexus phones aren't a huge seller. They're not going out to compete with, like, the Galaxy this or that for, you know, big holiday sales. But late October does make a little more sense for when people tend to be buying stuff. You're kind of getting into that pre-holiday rush of everything. And Yeah. And, you know, even if they know they're not going to be competing with Samsung's latest or LG's latest or what have you, you know, it still does make sense to me that they would go closer to that than late summer, which companies do it, but it's a little more of an unusual time to release, you know, a major new phone.
It might also give them some time to actually manufacture some devices so that they have some available for sale.
Yeah. It's always a process, isn't it?
that's being kind. Okay, so a couple of tiny little things that I wanted to touch on Marshmallow itself before we move on there is I would like to formally do an audio rant of how much I hate the fact that they do stage rollouts on preview releases. I think that is the absolute dumbest thing in the history of the world. This is a preview release that everyone who has opted into this has manually flashed to their devices. If I go in there and if I press check for latest update or whatever, and I know one is there, it should come down. I don't want to hear anything. I don't want any stage rollouts on this. I think it is absolutely absurd, and is just plain annoying because, yeah, of course I can flash it myself, but then I have to do all my logins again, and which is what I did. And only, you know, Google have definitely made strides to improve that process. So I did the, you know, a restore from my most recent, you know, I just flashed it on my Nexus 5 and it said, do you want to reinstall from the most recent backup of the Nexus 5? And I clicked yes, and it did a good job of picking down all the app updates, only the apps that were on the Nexus 5 at the time and that sort of stuff. But I still had to go through and log into all of my apps. There were two that actually restored with login details, only two. Everything else I had to log in again, which I know is entirely based on the app, but it's just annoying. And yes, I just cannot see. Maybe there's an obvious reason there. I just cannot see it. It just seems absurd to me that stage rollouts are in place on preview releases. So I have got that little bit on my chest.
No, I mean, that's a very valid point, because really, as I understand it, the whole reason to do a stage rollout is so that if anything weird happens, if there's any glitches, any bugs, you can catch it before, you know, it goes out to however many tens of thousands, probably millions of people, depending on the app. But in this case, the people who are using it are all developers or, you know, somewhere close to developer status, people who are enthusiasts and know what they're doing enough to be able to flash stuff on a device. They're not average consumers. They've opted into an unstable release, by the nature of it.
It's a very explicit opt-in. It's not like I just clicked accept on a dialogue. I had to manually flash this thing. This should be coming down every time. Anyway.
Yeah, and going into it, you know this could completely break your phone. You're not expecting this to be smooth and stable. You're expecting the worst. And if your phone works or your tablet works, you're thrilled. I mean, you know, some of the preview releases, you never know what's going to break or what's going to act funky or what app isn't going to cooperate with it. So you know going in that you're running that risk. If you get the, you know, an OTA update and things break, you're not going to go crazy. You're going to be like, okay, well, this could happen. I mean, it'll be annoying, but it's kind of part of the course with this sort of thing.
That's right. But yeah, very annoying. Okay, so also this week, we had a leak of what certainly looked like this year's Nexus phone. I take it you saw that?
Yeah, we've seen kind of in varying capacities the alleged LG Nexus 5 and then the larger Huawei one that, you know, both of which are rumored to be made.
Heavily rumored, I think.
But yeah, I think you're talking about the LG one where it was supposedly like the white-backed phone and you could actually see the real phone itself. Yeah, you know, I think everyone's been hoping for another Nexus 5, another 5-inch manageably sized phone. If you love a
giant phone in your hand.
Yeah, likewise. You know, if you like the giant plate-sized phone, God bless you, go get one. But you know, for people who like a more reasonably sized phone, it sure would be nice to have that option. You know, I want to hold on to a healthy dose of skepticism because I feel like, I think it was last year, maybe the year before, no, I think it was last year, where we had similar rumors that there were going to be two different Nexus phones, and we saw leaks, we saw specs, we saw mock-ups, and then there's just one in the end. So I don't want to marry the idea in my mind yet that there are going to be two until it actually happens, but it would be a really strange departure for Google, but it would also make a lot of sense for them to do a large phone and a small phone.
Well, I was always of the mind that it would make no sense, and because it's not like Google have mastered releasing one Nexus phone, so why...
Well, that's true. That's true.
As I look back, I think there's only ever been two Nexus releases that I would describe as being successful from a user point of view, certainly from my experience, and that was the Nexus 5 and the second Nexus 7. And I think it's very clear that both of those devices it was the second go-round for the manufacturer. So it wasn't like Google had to, you know, change teams and all that sort of stuff. But as far as multiple Nexus phones this year are concerned, I read one report a couple of months ago that said the reason I'm showing my ignorance.
I've always heard Huawei as the official one. Huawei. But if they come out with one, this will be the year that everyone knows how to say Huawei. Either get it right or not.
Okay, so I'm going to go with Huawei, and if I am wrong, then I apologize in advance. But the thinking was that the reason for partnering with Huawei was Huawei, a Chinese company, this was something that would help Google get the Play Store in China. And if that is the case, then I am absolutely all for it. And maybe I will buy a, a Huawei phone that I have no intention of using only to support the cause. But so I could understand if there's sort of political or other motivations for partnering with a second OEM. And look, it could also be the fact that I mentioned before, Google have never done a particularly good release with Nexus phones on their first time with a new partner. It could be that just splitting the hedging there, if you will, is something that helps, because I think Google certainly made a not so thinly veiled comment in one of their earnings calls earlier this year that basically Motorola, I think, largely screwed them with the Nexus 9. They just didn't give them enough stock. Whereas if they do multiple Nexus phones, at least they can hedge a bit. And if you can't get one, then maybe it's not the size you want, but at least you can get another. So I can see some logic there. So I've definitely come around on why there might be multiple Nexus phones. And I think at this point, it's been so heavily rumored, I'd be very surprised if it didn't happen.
Yeah, it's definitely looking more and more like a firm possibility, for sure. And, you know, one thing, too, which I don't want to get too optimistic, but in the last year, Google also did launch a new online storefront, the official Google store, that is selling a lot of devices. So maybe, fingers crossed, one would hope that will lead them to do a little better retail experience with this. You know, I don't know that they've really had a major challenge with it yet, but they do have a store up now, an official storefront where they're selling Android devices and Chromebooks. It's not just kind of lumped in with the Google Play sort of as an extra section. They made that known. So maybe that'll help a little. I don't know how, like, internally, if that is really much of an operation or it was just sort of a visual change. It's hard to say.
It is hard to say. That doesn't fill me with too much hope either way, because at the end of the day, you can have an online store, but unless you have the physical stock to sell, then there's no point. So I think that's where most of the problems are. But yeah, look, we'll see. But I'm certainly hopeful. The fact that it's LG, I think they certainly did my favorite Nexus phone, which was the Nexus 5, although I did have a soft spot for the Nexus S also. But yeah, look, hopefully it happens. As far as the Nexus 5 screenshot that was leaked, everything certainly points to a rear fingerprint scanner at this point, right?
Yeah, and you know what? That obviously makes a lot of sense. The Nexus phone is meant to show off what the current flagship... it's meant to be a flagship, rather, and show off what the current version of Android can do, and so Marshmallow, with that being a key feature, yeah, it makes a lot of sense that they're going to have a fingerprint scanner, and being that a Nexus phone is going to follow Google guidelines of using virtual on-screen buttons, maybe a rear-facing fingerprint scanner is the most logical way to go. And it seems like, too, the larger phone, the Huawei, as we'll keep calling it, I feel like there was something out there that suggested it was also going to have a rear fingerprint scanner. A little less concrete, but some kind of schematic or something that also showed that. So it'll be interesting to see if there are, in fact, two Nexus phones. I get the feeling that they would be pretty similar in design from all the leaks out there. And that seems like sort of what Google does. You know, all the Nexus devices, no matter who they're designed by, you look at like the Nexus 9 tablet sort of follows the same look as the Nexus 7 before it, the most recent Nexus 7. And they all kind of have this similar vibe, even though each company maybe throws in a little bit of its own flair to it. It's more of Google design language than HTC design language or you know, whatever the company is. So it would be kind of neat if you would get two phones from two different, very different companies, and they pretty much look like they were made by the same person. I'd be curious to see if that was
under the same brand, I guess, if you will.
Okay,
so moving on from the Nexus leak, Google released the On Hub this week. Your thoughts there? Oh, well, yeah, I guess we should qualify as what that is. It's basically a home router that Google hopes doesn't suck and is controlled largely by iOS and Android companion apps and will receive over-the-air updates and get better over time and that sort of stuff. So, and $200, I think it was, right?
Yeah, yes, I think it was somewhere right around there. Yeah, I definitely didn't see that coming. I don't know that anybody did. I think it just kind of popped up one day and we were like, whoa, what's this?
Yeah.
You know, I'm curious to see more and learn more. It really feels like what we know about it now is not everything it's capable of. You know, like it's supposed to be somebody had an interesting story out there about how it was supposed to be the tip of the whole new Google Home Enterprise, and it just seems like it's got to eventually do something more than just being a Wi-Fi router. It's going to serve as a hub at some point, but we don't have the other pieces of the puzzle yet, so we don't know that. But either way, I mean, it's a first router you've seen that you would say is a beautifully designed device, not just a hideous box that you tuck behind a desk somewhere. And I'm interested to learn more about what it does beyond just router capacities, and then also, you know, within the router realm, it really stands up to the promises that they've made of kind of taking the pain out of that. Routers have always just kind of sucked in every possible way. So if there's one that would be nice to use, not hideous, I mean, you know, you kind of, it's almost, even though it doesn't sound like Nest had a hand in this, almost like what Nest is doing with something like a smoke detector, just a simple utilitarian thing. Is like, oh, wait, we can do this better. Why has everyone been doing this so poorly for all these years?
Well, it's, I think there's a couple of different ways to look at it, and one is certainly, well, maybe it will do more in the future, and I think that it's definitely reasonable to think that that might be the case. But I think if you break it down, what the OnHub is about is making it easier for people to get online, and it's very similar to Google Fiber in that regard, right? Like I know even from my experience, like, it is just a giant pain setting up a router, and when something goes wrong, like, I can never even remember what IP address it's on to type in the browser, and then you've got this browser interface that is from a time before CSS invented, and it is just the absolute worst. And you worry anytime you change one thing, are you going to break something else? Whereas the interface for the OnHub just looks terrific. And I certainly wish I didn't buy myself a new more than $200 router about 3 months ago. If Google wanted, you know, I would have loved if, rather than giving a Nexus 9 at I.O., the OnHub were ready and they surprised us by releasing that. But obviously that wasn't to be. But yeah, I mean, I think if all this device eventually does is create an easy, reliable way for people to get home Wi-Fi set up, I think that's a giant win, you know, without taking anything further future implications into account.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And, you know, it all comes back to, like, what we were talking about before. Google's business is all about collecting data so they can sell ads. In order to do that, people have to be online. And if it's a pain to get online, or it doesn't work well, you know, that's a roadblock to getting online, to using the internet, to doing things that Google wants you to do. So it sort of seems like it could be one of those win-win, where it makes a lot of sense for Google from a business perspective, even if that's all it does. But then it also is one of those things that has sort of been ripe to be disrupted and blown apart for ages, because no one's really, to my knowledge, done a router well. It's like, no. You've got ones that are a little less crappy than others, but they all kind of suck. You know, the same with, like we were saying, smoke detectors, but there's so many things out there that are just mundane and you don't think about, but then somebody does them in a way that makes sense, and you say, oh yeah, you know, putting like actual good user interface design to everyday objects, it kind of does make a big deal in your life. You don't think, like, God, I wish I had a nice router. But when you have one, yeah, it makes your life a lot easier, and all those little things add up.
Absolutely. Did you find it a bit odd that this didn't come out as a Nest product?
Yeah, I really did. I really did. And I can't say definitively, but from the sounds of it, it doesn't sound like it had anything to do with Nest. Like, it was,
no, well,
like,
there was
Nest necessarily designed it.
Wired had an article that certainly suggested this was a part of the Chromecast team.
Yeah, which is very surprising. I mean, maybe it's one of the things that had just been in the works for a while, but the headline about it, the blog post, maybe I got an email or something, my immediate thought was, oh, cool, this must be the first Nest product. And then I started reading, I was like, wait a minute, it's not. That was very surprising to me.
I'm going to speculate wildly, and I wonder if that's a sign that Google aren't entirely thrilled with how the Nest acquisition has gone so far. And by doing it this way, then it sort of gives them the opportunity, if they wanted to spin Nest out on their own or something like that, they could. Because it does feel like this ought to be a product of Nest, but I don't know. I have nothing to base that on, but it just seems a little odd to me. But I can
yeah.
At the same time absolutely see why this would be a part of Google. I mean, for starters, it was, you know, if for no reason other than the fact that it was largely made by the Chromecast team. So I don't know. Maybe there's nothing into that, and the topic of Nest, I think, is is another discussion entirely, and frankly, one that I'm not entirely informed of because I don't think they even sell a product in Australia. I've certainly never seen one working. So anyway, file that one as random speculation.
Yeah, one little sidebar from that. So with the whole Alphabet reorganization, I'm sure anyone listening to this is vaguely familiar with it. You know, Google is now owned by a parent company called Alphabet. With this being a, you know, Google product, I'm wondering if where it stands in terms of that whole organization, because we don't know yet. I mean, the whole Alphabet thing is still pending. They announced it. It hasn't really taken effect. But from everything that we've been hearing and what we've been discussing here, it sounds like this is part of Google. If it had been part of Nest, then once the whole Alphabet thing goes into effect, it and Google would have been in different divisions, technically different companies, different corporations. I don't know. I wonder if there's something to that. Maybe that's just coincidental again, and the same little asterisk here. I'm speculating. But yeah, we know that Nest and Google are going to be separate companies, both owned by Alphabet, and it sounds like this will remain part of Google. So I don't know. Maybe I wonder if there's anything to that.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we will see how that plays out going forward.
Yeah.
So a couple of little tidbits before we wrap up here. You made an interesting discovery about the... was it yourself or was it Android Central that there's no more Google Plus auto installs on the latest... on what is it, the Note 5?
Yeah, I would happily take credit for it. But yeah, that was the Android Central guys. I reshared their post and added some of my own comments on social media. But yeah, they noticed that Google Plus wasn't... a preloaded program along with, I want to say it was like Play Newsstand and one or two others, sort of the auxiliary Google apps, which my comment was, and I love Google Plus as much as the next guy. I use it all the time. I'm a big fan of it personally. But that's great. You know, I don't think anything happens with Google Plus now, you're going to get the people who say, oh, I told you it's about to die. I don't know. Maybe there is some big conspiracy going on and everyone at Google is just lying that it is going to die tomorrow. Maybe. I don't know. But they seem pretty intent on the fact that they're committed to Google Plus for what it is. It's probably not the Facebook killer, but it makes sense as an interest-based social network, and that's how they're treating it, and that's their story, and they're sticking with it. And, you know, to me, the fact that Google Plus, the app, is not being installed as a default part of the, you know, preloaded Google Suite on Android phones doesn't necessarily indicate anything. Photos, when it was part of Google Plus, it made sense, because a new user of a device might be looking for a way to easily back up his or her photos, and that was part of it. But now that it's just a social network, why should Google preload it? You know, Google doesn't preload a lot of other apps that it has. It in theory, preloads the ones that are sort of core to the user experience, and there's some that are maybe a little gray line and where it's extended itself arguably further than it should. But for the most part, you know, it's the core user experience, the core Google Suite that gets installed. And with photos out of it, I don't think Google Plus really is part of that, even if you like it. If you like it, you download it. So it's just like any other app.
Yeah, I certainly agree. I don't think there can be any doubt that Google are largely walking away from Google Plus as far as it being central to everything the company does. And I think even if Google would have shut off Google Plus tomorrow, I don't think it would be right to label it a failure, because it did so much to sort of unify everyone having one login rather than 50 different logins across all these Google products. And Photos came out of it, which was, you know, a massive, it's just an absolutely terrific program. I can't speak service. I can't speak highly enough of Google Photos. But anyway, we can speculate on the long-term health of Google Plus for, you know, hours on end. But
that's a whole other show.
Yeah, it is, and it's definitely interesting that it's at least worth mentioning. Certainly, that Google have seen fit to take it out of the core suite of apps that have to be installed by carriers. Okay, so a lot of the OnePlus 2 reviews dropped this week. Have you got your hands on that phone yet?
You know, mine allegedly arrived today. I've yet to pick it up. Much like everybody else who tries to get a OnePlus 2, it has not been easy for me. Yes, the media. Yeah. You know, theoretically, and I don't want to get into too much inside baseball here, theoretically, reviewing it, you get them in a timely manner. Everybody gets them at the same time. I'm going to chalk it up to this being a company that isn't the most organized and maybe together in their efforts, as we've seen in a lot of ways. It was one of those where it's like, yeah, no problem, you're getting it. Of course, it's on the way. Then suddenly, wait a minute, everybody else has it. Oh, sorry, clerical error, we'll get it. And yeah. Long story short, I should have it soon. I haven't seen it yet. That's always a tough one for me to wrap my head around, because there are always a lot of good things, well, always, I say, with last year's and then what we know, what I've read about this year's without having personally reviewed it or spent a long period of time with it. So many good things about it, and obviously the price is very appealing. But as a guy who recommends phones to people, you know, when I review devices and kind of come up with parameters of if you're looking for this, you might want to buy this, it's hard to recommend it because I'm recommending phones you can buy, and most people can't buy it. You kind of have to jump through a lot of hoops, and even as an Android enthusiast, you have to jump through a lot of hoops. And if I think about, you know, like my aunt or someone who might want an Android phone and trying to tell her, yeah, go buy the OnePlus 2, yes, here's what you have to do, and giving her this whole list and sign up and find an invite or find someone who knows it, who has one, you know, and it's hard to, I don't want to be too negative on it because there are a lot of good things about it, but it's a little hard to take seriously as an option for most people. If you can get one and it does a trick for you, more power to you, but it's hard to really fully take them seriously.
I think that's such an interesting point you raised there, and one that I saw Ron Amadio, who was on The Blurg last week, and if you didn't listen to that episode where Ron and I discussed Alphabet, then you should definitely give that a listen to. But he had a terrific post on Google Plus yesterday where he basically said exactly that. He said, you know, it's a great deal for $330 to $380 if you can buy one. You can't, though, so this is all kind of meaningless. The deal seems too good to be true because it is. And there are another five paragraphs there, and it's a terrific post, and it does highlight the reality of the situation with the OnePlus devices at the moment. And I do remember reading I think it was a Wall Street Journal profile with Carl Pei, the CEO, where he spoke about the invite system versus versus going a traditional route of raising money and that sort of stuff so that they could manufacture enough phones. And I can see how he would be of the mind that the invite system is the way to go. But at the end of the day, if you've got 3 million people on a wait list, that it's going to take them, what, a year, half a year to fulfill that? By then, people, you know, certainly the next Nexus phone will be out. And the Android ecosystem moves fast. You've got, you know, millions of people. They've done some might say, you know, they've had their questionable ways of drumming up press for themselves. But the reality is they have built themselves quite a bit of a name at this point and done well in that regard. But at the end of the day, you've got to allow people to buy your devices, and it's certainly not entirely proven at this point that the invite system is satisfying millions of people. So it's
I think it was interesting when, and I don't remember the exact date, but we'll say a few months ago, whenever it was that the original OnePlus, they made the big announcement of, okay, the gates are open, you can actually buy it. I think they did it twice. They did it once for like a really limited time and a certain number.
I think
of
I know what you're gonna
then
say
the second here. But the second time they did it, it was almost like this feeling of who cares? You know, it's like, okay, great, you can buy it. And it was still a pretty good value. I mean, they were selling at a good discount. You know, when you look at like that compared to the other phones in that sort of budget price range, yeah, still a pretty good value even being a year old. But by the time they came around where it's like you could just buy it, did anyone give a shit anymore?
Yeah, I mean, and what I thought was interesting about that post, I assume we're talking about the same one, was they're like going, yay, no more invites. Invites are terrible. You can just buy this. And then they're like, oh, but we're still going to need invites for the next phone. So,
right.
Which is it? Are invites great or not? But yeah.
Moment. And this is something that I was actually thinking of exploring that I may elaborate on in an article at some point in the near future. But, you know, for all practical purposes, would the OnePlus 2 exist if it weren't for blogs covering its guerrilla marketing efforts? I started thinking about that today, and, you know, I don't know. I think if it weren't for these really aggressive marketing efforts that get the attention of a lot of blogs and some mainstream news sites, tech sites in particular, you know, it would probably just be another one of these little small-scale phones from a company you've never heard of. Some people will buy and be happy with. Most people wouldn't have heard of. So, I mean, I guess in that regard, kudos to them because they've done great job, you know, questionable anyone who pays attention to Android knows who they are. And really, in any other sense, you'd have no idea. It'd just be this random phone that some people order that you'd be like, oh, you'd never see it, you'd never hear about it. And they would probably still sell the same number because, who knows, I mean, they're not selling that many of them with this invite system. Maybe they wouldn't quite do as well without the attention. But, yeah, they're an interesting company. It's an interesting approach. We'll leave it at that.
I think that's a very good way of describing it. And it's, you know, there's definitely a part of me that, you know, wishes them well. And anything that tries to make a good... They're doing their best to try and make a great Android phone, and that's an enviable goal and something I think the market absolutely needs. But it's, I guess it highlights just how tricky the hardware game is, especially, you know, if you're a startup and certainly if you haven't raised a bunch of money where you can afford to just go and pre-order 2 million of these things to get made. So it's, yeah. I don't know. I can't speak too much about that because I have absolutely no idea what is involved in hardware. The only thing I do know is a very good quote that I read from Nest CEO Tony Fadell. And actually, it wasn't a quote. It was in a video. But he spoke about, and he, for those who aren't aware, he was one of the, they call him the godfather of the iPod. So had very instrumental in the iPod and the first iPhone and that sort of stuff. And he said, he's dubious on Kickstarter programs when it comes to hardware because the only time you actually make money on hardware is generally on the third revision. The first two revisions, you know, you're scrambling, trying to get parts, trying to break even and that sort of stuff. It's not until the third revision. And most Kickstarter campaigns don't give you anywhere near enough money to get to that point. And I think that's a very interesting takeaway from someone who absolutely knows what he's talking about in this space about the difficulties of running a hardware startup. So, yeah, I think, I guess we'll see what OnePlus have said. They've got another phone coming out by December, but I would expect the invite system would still be around there, but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I think I feel about that the way you said what you said originally about the Nexus phones. Figure out how to handle one first, and then we'll talk about doing two devices within a couple of months.
Yeah,
you know, once they can get one down. One more thing on the OnePlus that comes to mind. I'm wondering how much of an impact Motorola, and in particular the whatever you want to call it, the Moto X Pure Edition, the main Moto X. They've called it so many different things. I have a Moto X sitting next to me, and I activated my launch phrase by saying that. I'm curious if anyone heard that in the background. I'm curious how much of an impact that's going to have on the OnePlus success. And maybe they just kind of appeal to different demographics so much that it won't matter. But the first time around, you know, the OnePlus One, it was just like this unheard of getting this kind of hardware and quality at that price point. And aside from the budgety phones like the Moto G and the Alcatel Idol and all those, you know, the Moto X this year is coming out at a starting price of $400. And that's from a mainstream manufacturer. Odds are you're going to be able to just walk in. Well, actually, they're not selling in stores, but you're going to be able to go over to Motorola's website and just buy it, you know, pretty easily. Maybe it'll sell out of certain models or like the wood material or whatever. But, you know, I haven't used it yet. Hopefully we'll get the chance to within the next few weeks. It's supposed to launch sometime in early to mid-September, I think. But from all accounts so far, it looks like it's going to be a pretty impressive device, as long as you're okay with a big phone, which, you know, OnePlus is also no petite phone. So at $400, which isn't a lot more than what the OnePlus starts at, I don't know. I'm wondering if that's going to rain on the parade a little bit.
Certainly, it'd be interesting.
And this much, you bump up a little more. Yeah, yeah. Motorola's shaking things up a lot with that price, and it'll be curious to see how that spreads and how that affects not only OnePlus, but, you know, any number of other manufacturers.
Yeah, for sure. It continues to be a race to the bottom, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. It's hopefully good for us in the long run. Certainly doesn't seem like it can be good for the people making these devices. I don't know how it can be.
Yeah, well, if Apple continue to suck 60-70% of the entire handset industry's profits, and Samsung get a good chunk of the rest, that doesn't leave much for anyone else.
Yeah, I guess they do what they can to get by.
Okay, JR, thanks so much for joining us today. Do you want to let everyone know where people can find you online?
Yeah, sure. Google Plus, Twitter, both there is just my name, JR Rayfield, but it doesn't It's not spelled the way it sounds. So the easiest thing is if you just go to my personal website, which is jrstart.com, and you'll find links to all my stories and social media stuff there.
Okay, terrific. Well, JR, thanks so much for coming on. Hopefully we'll have you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.
Okay, cheers, mate.